Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you are the judges of the evidence to be laid before you. Be just and fear not, for the true administration of justice is the foundation of good government. Famous jury trials, dramatizations of cases taken from actual court history. The names of persons and places have been altered to protect the identity of those concerned.
The State versus Benson Carter.
It was nearly midnight of a summer night several years ago when a truck driver named Timothy Shane, piloting a load of valuable furs, was held up on the high road and brutally murdered. The entire holdup gang was rounded up by the police, and first to go on trial for his life was 20-year-old Benson Carter, who was charged with actually firing the fatal shot that killed Timothy Shane. And then came the dramatic revelation that young Vincent Carter was the son of Stephen Carter, a prominent and respected lawyer who lived in a distant city. A son who, after being involved in various escapades and finally thrown out of college, had been disinherited by his father. The trial for murder heaped final disgrace on upright, family-proud Stephen Carter. But 2 days before the trial began, Stephen Carter suddenly arrived in the city where his son was held in custody. And a few hours later...
In here, Mr. Carter.
Dad.
Hello, son.
I'll be back in 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, what are you doing here, Dad?
I'm here to help you, son, if I can.
I don't need your help. I got into this my own way. I guess I can get out of it my way, too.
I'm not here as your father, Benny. I want you to engage me as your lawyer. That's a job I do know how to do.
Dad.
If you have me as your lawyer, there are two conditions I'll have to make. First, you must tell me the absolute truth. And second, you must do exactly what I tell you to do. You understand?
Yeah, but...
Will you let me defend you, Benny?
Yes, Dad. Yes, I guess I couldn't ask for better news.
What is your occupation, Mr. Reddick?
I run a gas station and lunchroom about 20 miles out of town.
Hey, look at the defendant, please. Ever see him before?
Yes, on the night of August 3rd, the night Tim Shane was murdered.
Tell us what happened to you.
Well, it was about 11:30 when Carter drove up to my place and ordered a cup of coffee. A few minutes later, another car drove up and four other fellows came in. A fellow named Joe seemed to be the leader. Joe Scarelli, his name was, I learned afterwards.
And what did they do?
Well, I heard Scarelli say something about he's got a truck ready, and one of them asked Carter if he's sure Tim Shane hasn't gone by already. And Carter says, stop worrying. I told you he don't pull out from the warehouse at 11:30. He won't be here till midnight.
The defendant said that?
Yes. And about 5 minutes later, Scarelli and Carter go outside together. It seems like they have an argument out there. Finally, Vince Carter drives off in his car. Scarelli watches him a sec, and all of a sudden he comes tearing inside and hollers to the others to come on.
And what happened?
Well, they begin to catch on to what's eating him, but Scarelli don't wait to argue. He runs out to his car, and the others pile in, and they tear off down the road after Carter.
And what did you do?
Oh, just as he was driving off, it suddenly come to me they were figuring on holding up Tim Shane's truck. And I took a chance on it and called up the police and put in an alarm.
Thank you. Your witness.
Mr. Ruddy, when Vincent Carter drove off in this car, which direction did he go in? Further down the road or back toward town?
He went towards town.
And Scarelli and the others followed him in that direction?
Why, sure.
Mr. Ruddick, did it appear to you that when Vincent Carter drove off in his car, that something went wrong with the holdup plans at that point?
I object to that question, calling for conclusions of the witness.
Just, Jane.
There was a good deal of confusion, wasn't there? A sudden necessity for action which none of Scarelli's confederates understood when he ordered them into the car.
Well, it did seem kind of unexpected, like, soon.
Thank you. That's all.
Call police officer Henry Ball.
Henry Ball! Henry Ball! Henry Ball!
Officer, would you tell the jury what occurred near midnight on the night of August 3rd?
Well, I was in a car patrolling the main highway out of town when we got an alarm that a truck driven by a driver named Timothy Shane, which had just left town, was going to be held up. So we headed for town as fast as we could to warn him.
And what happened?
We were just too late to save Tim's life. The holdup was already underway when we came upon the scene, and Tim Shane was lying on the road with two bullets to his head.
Did you find the pistol that Shane was murdered with?
Yes. You see, when we came on the scene of the holdup, the gang tried to make a getaway in their cars. Carter was in one car and the other four in Scarelli's car. Well, we chased him and we saw Carter throw something out of his car into the brush beside the road. And after we caught the gang, we looked for what Carter had tried to get rid of, and we found it. It was the pistol Shane was killed with.
I show you a pistol and ask if you recognize it.
Yes, that's the one we found.
I offer it in evidence.
No objection.
Did you examine this pistol for fingerprints?
Yes. And the only prints on the gun were Vincent Carter.
There's the witness.
Officer, did you examine the hands of the defendant here for traces of gunpowder?
We did as soon as we got into the station. And we couldn't find any traces of burnt powder.
But isn't it a fact that traces of burnt gunpowder are always found on the hand of someone who has recently fired a gun?
Yes. Unless, of course, he used a handkerchief or a glove to protect his hand.
But in that case, the defendant would have left no fingerprints on the pistol either, would he?
No, left. I guess not.
One more question, officer. James' truck was loaded with valuable furs.
Yes, it was.
Didn't the boys planning this holdup have a truck that might have been used to carry the furs away yet?
Yes, we found it parked up the road away.
On which side of Riddick's gas station? Towards town or away from town?
Well, it would be about 5 miles the other side of the station, away from the town.
In other words, nowhere near the place where the holdup actually took place.
Well, no, but...
That's all, officer.
Call Nora Shane.
Nora Shane! Nora Shane! Nora Shane!
Mrs. Shane, you are the wife of Tim Shane, who was killed.
Yes. Yes, I am.
You know the defendant?
Yes. He was a friend of Tim. Tim liked him. He trusted him.
Your husband and the defendant worked for the same concern?
Yes. Tim drove a truck for them. Vince Carter was a clerk in the warehouse. That's how they met.
Did you see the defendant on the afternoon of August 3rd, the day of the holdup?
Yes, I did. It was about 5 o'clock, it was, when he came around to the house. All the time he was planning murder in the black house of him.
That is objected to. Strike out that lot.
And try and control your natural feelings, Mrs. Shane, and just answer the question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did you hear the conversation between your husband and the defendant that afternoon?
That I did. It was all kinds of questions about Tim's trip that night, he was asking. How much was the Lord worth? When was Tim starting out with it? What role he was taking? And then he asked. He carried a gun. And Tim says, no, me own 250 is good enough for me. Who can have been would have been in a fair fight and not like he was shot down without even a chance to defend himself? I never took over there.
There's the witness. No question.
Unable to stand the strain of hearing the deadly testimony of Mrs. Shane go unchallenged, Vincent Carter leapt from his seat to assert his innocence. And there were many in the courtroom who felt his action was justified. That no competent lawyer would have let such damaging testimony go unchallenged. And spectators began to wonder if Vincent Carter had not made a great mistake in entrusting his defense to his father. Remembering that Stephen Carter had made his brilliant legal reputation in the practice of civil law and not criminal law. Was Stephen Carter fumbling the defense of his son? Did his lack of experience in criminal law leave him at a hopeless disadvantage before the legal wizardry of the brilliant district attorney? We will continue this dramatic trial in just a moment.
Here's another way to view famous jury trials on KNBR 68.
And now we take you back to the courtroom where the district attorney has called the final witness for the prosecution, Joe Scarelli.
Scarelli, you are at present under arrest and charged with complicity in the murder of Timothy Shane.
Yeah, all of us, I knew. But none of us had nothing to do with no murder. It was Carter.
Wait a minute, Joe. Now, I want you to tell the jury just what happened on the night of August 3rd.
Well, Carter had worked out a plan to hold up Kim Shane's truck. And me and the gang agreed to go in with him.
Yes.
About 11:30 that night of August 3rd, we all meet at Ruddick's lunchroom like we planned. Vince and me go outside to be sure that everything's straight, and I ask him if he's sure Tim Shane will recognize him when we hold him up. And Carter says, "Don't worry, I'll take care of that." And he shows me a pistol he's carrying. And then he gets in his car and drives off.
And you didn't try to stop him?
When I see what he's planning to do, I rustle the gang out of there and we go tearing after Vince as fast as we can. I want to catch him and get my run away from him before he gets drawn in a real trouble.
And did you catch him?
Yeah, but the truck come along before we could argue about the rod, and then things happened fast. We held her up, and I'm telling Shane to climb out, and then Carter let him have it. Two shots. And Shane tumbled out of a cab with truck dead.
Your witness. Well, Ed, you ever hear of a man named Arthur Praed?
Why, yeah, sure. He was murdered 3 or 4 years ago in a holdup. It was in all the papers.
Where were you on the night that Prey was murdered?
I don't get.
Didn't you shoot Arthur Prey with this pistol here? The same pistol you used to murder Timothy James?
Your Honor, object. Strike the question.
Weren't you arrested for that crime?
Objection. Strike it out.
Scarelli, you hid the truck in which the Cardaway the stolen furs 5 miles beyond Ruddick's gas station.
Yeah.
But the holdup occurred on the other side of Ruddick's filling station. Miles from where the truck was hidden.
Yeah, but that's all.
You didn't plan it that way, did you? The holdup took place where it did because that's where you intercepted Vincent Carter. Vincent Carter, who had learned you were carrying a gun and were contemplating murder in your heart. And Vincent Carter had raced back toward town to try and warn his friend Tim Shane. Now, isn't that the truth?
No, I never had no gun.
That's a lie. Don't you kill Shane. I saw you.
Vincent, sit down.
I won't sit down. I'm going to hear what's coming to him, Shane.
Hold that, man.
I'm going to put
it. Hold that. Hold that. Hold that.
As Vincent Carter tried to assault the sharp-featured, gray-eyed youth on the witness stand, pandemonium broke out loose in the courtroom. And when order was finally restored, the district attorney rested his case. And Stephen Carter, stern-faced and emotionless, began the defense for his son by examining his first witness. Albert Shore, you were formerly ballistics expert for the police department of this city.
Yes, until I retired a while back.
I show you this pistol here with which Timothy Shane was killed. Have you seen this gun within the past week?
Yes, I did.
And what did you discover as to its past history?
I found that this pistol was the one used 4 years ago to fire the bullets that killed a man named Arthur Prey in a payroll robbery. And it picked up on where your son was on the day of that murder and found out he was 500 miles away playing in a high school football game.
Objection! Strike out that lie.
Now, Mr. Shaw, do you remember if anyone was arrested for the murder of Arthur Prey?
Your Honor, I object.
This is a question of fact, Your Honor.
Objection overruled. The witness will answer.
We arrested Joseph Scarelli and questioned him, but We couldn't find the murder weapon, and without it, we couldn't get a case that would hold up in court, even though there was a good deal of circumstantial evidence against Scarelli.
Your Honor, I object to all of that answer.
Overruled.
And that is the same Joe Scarelli who was involved in this present case.
Yes, sir.
Take the witness.
Just one question, Mr. Shore. You don't know who owned this pistol on the day Arthur Prey was shot?
No, I don't.
And you don't know if that person subsequently lost or sold this pistol or had it stolen from him?
No.
That's all.
I call the defendant, Vincent Carter, to the stand.
Vincent Carter? Vincent Carter? Vincent Carter?
Benson, I want you to tell the jury the truth. You didn't get on at home, did you? You grew up setting your own ways too often. And you were hard to manage and difficult to control.
Yeah, I guess that's true enough.
After several different escapades, you were thrown out of college.
Yeah.
And what did your father do?
He told me... The only thing that would save me was for me to have to struggle with my life on my own. And he said he was going to disinherit me. He gave me $100 and washed his hands on me.
How old were you then?
I was 18.
And what did you do?
Well, I came here and I got a job in the warehouse, $18 a week. Well, it wasn't long before I wanted more money with him. I began hanging around dives where they'd let you gamble. That's why I met Joe Scarelli.
And from gambling with these criminals, you drifted into occasional petty crime.
Yes, sir.
And then?
Then I wanted to be in on something big.
What happened on the night of August 3rd?
We all met at the gas station, and while we were waiting there, I found out that Scarelli was carrying a gun. And I suddenly realized he meant to use it.
Yes?
Well, I think I suddenly grew up in about 10 seconds outside the gas station that night. And I suddenly saw myself as I was, a rotten, spoiled kid who wanted something for nothing. When I realized that someone might be murdered on account of what I was doing, I suddenly saw what I was coming to. What crime really meant, and what it did to people.
And what did you do?
I only had one thought, sir, to warn Tim Shane. So I got in my car and raced back toward town to meet him, but Scarelli realized what I was up to, and he and the gang chased me in the other car.
And then?
I met Tim and got him to stop. But before I had a chance to say anything, Scarelli and the others were on top of it. Tim wanted to fight it out, and Scarelli plugged him. Tim died thinking I double-crossed him.
And then what happened?
Well, police came, sir. Scarelli tossed the gun into my car just as we were trying to make a getaway. I was too dazed, panicky to think. I knew the gun must be found in my car, so I tossed it out in the bushes, and of course I left my fingerprints on the gun when I tossed it out.
Scarelli had been wearing gloves?
Yes, sir. That's why he didn't leave any prints.
And the police captured you?
Yeah, and I told them the absolute truth, but they wouldn't believe me. They believed Scarelli instead.
Cross-examined.
Carter, you admit that this hijacking venture is not your first excursion outside the law?
Yes, sir, but they were only little jobs.
You were armed the night of August 3rd, weren't you?
No, sir, I never carried a gun, never.
And you want the jury to believe you planned to hold up that truck without being armed?
Yes. There were five of us.
Yes, and Tim Shane was a match for the lot of you if it came to a fight. But you weren't going to risk a fight on an open road where any motorist could see you, were you? No. You carried a gun, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
You knew Tim Shane would recognize you, didn't you? That's why he had to be killed. That's why you murdered him, isn't it?
I tell you, I didn't do it. I didn't.
That's all.
The defense rests, Your Honor.
They rest.
Sum up all the defense, please, Mr. Carter.
Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, 4 years ago, a man named Arthur Prey was murdered. Joe Scarelli was arrested for that crime, but released when the police failed to find the murder weapon. Here is that pistol, ladies and gentlemen, the pistol that killed Timothy Shane. History repeats itself. Once again, we have a murder committed with this pistol and Joe Scarelli on the scene of the crime. Coincidence? A very strange coincidence. And what are the other facts in this case? Why did the holdup take place miles from where the criminals had hidden their truck in which to carry off their loot? Can you believe the crime was planned that way? Isn't it clear from the evidence that the defendant was trying to warn Tim Shane of his danger? And that's why he drove back toward town. And what of the defendant's fingerprints on the pistol? If those prints had been made when Vincent Carter fired the pistol, there would have been traces of gunpowder on his hand. And there were no such traces. We admit this boy helped plan the holdup, but intent to commit crime is not a criminal offense. And from the moment Vincent Carter fled in horror from the gas station to warn his friends, he was actively trying to prevent this crime. Ladies and gentlemen, this boy is innocent of the crime of murder.
The prosecution will sum up. Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen, I will spare you any further rhetoric. Facts, ladies and gentlemen. Vincent Carter helped plan this holdup, that is admitted. But can you believe he planned to hold up a powerful, athletic man unarmed? It would have been childish to try it. Do you believe he would gather the crucial facts necessary for a successful holdup from his victim and hold him up? How could he possibly have escaped detection? The defendant was willing to take such risks only because he intended to kill Tim Shane and so eliminate all chance of Shane being able to identify him. That is plain, logical, cold, common sense. Could anyone ask for a more ironclad case? Ladies and gentlemen, this boy is a killer. Whether it's his father's fault or his own is beside the point. He is a cold-blooded killer, remorseless, treacherous, and callous. I demand a verdict of guilty of murder in the first degree.
The judge will now instruct the jury.
How would you have judged Vincent Carter as a spoiled, irresponsible youth who became a cold-blooded murderer, or a youth undisciplined and self-willed whom bad companionship influenced into petty crime? And who suddenly realized what was happening to him, but too late to escape the awful consequences of the forces he had set in motion. In just a moment, we return for the jury's verdict.
8 years ago, I was Turkey's most interesting radio station.
For 10 hours, the fate of Vincent Carter hung in the balance. And then the jury filed into the courtroom, prepared to deliver their verdict.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
And how do you find?
We find the defendant, Vincent Carter, not guilty.
Triumphantly acquitted of the terrible charge of murder, Vincent Carter, of his own accord, confessed the details of his previous petty crimes, was sentenced to prison and later paroled, his debt to society paid. And when Joseph Scarelli was placed on trial for the murder of Timothy Shane, it was proved that the murder weapon belonged to Scarelli, and Scarelli, after confessing to both murders, paid for his crimes in the electric chair. The other members of the gang were tried as accessories and given long prison terms. And so ended the dramatic and sensational trial of the State versus Vincent Carter.